Okay. We're going to look at a small topic inside of a larger idea that we are studying in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. If you want to turn to that, Dan has the handout. I think I got everybody a copy of the handout, but if you need one, you can raise your hand. We're going to be talking about the verses 34 and 35 of 1 Corinthians 14. In that we have the, like I mentioned, if you look it up on Wikipedia, this is the, these must have been added in later verses, just because people don't like them. But even if we are going to try to obey them, we might have some questions about what are we going to do with some of the different circumstances that we find ourselves in. And so I'm just going to do a lesson on this, and I've had some conversations with you, and I received some emails from you, and I really appreciate that feedback. I was curious as to what you were thinking or what's on your mind. And when I preach a sermon, that isn't the end. Usually it's the end of the sermon. I probably am not going to have part two of this unless I totally, you know, botch it and need to do it again in a week. I'm not going to come back and do the rest of the people that need to be quiet. That's not the idea. But I'm trying to bring up a lot of ways that we can look at these verses and think about some of the questions that arise so that if you haven't thought about it before, maybe it can be helpful, or if you have and you want to have more conversations with me or with somebody else, we can do that together. But we're just going to begin by kind of dissecting the verses. I have put the ESV translation up on the screen. You can read it however you have it. I have included the word your because that is a King James and New King James inclusion as well, and I'm going to talk about that. But in verse 34... the women, or let your women, the women should keep silent in churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but should be in submission, as the law also says. If there is anything they desire to learn, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is shameful for a woman to speak in church. Just looking at the different words here, we're going to look at all, not every word, good grief, but we're going to look at a lot of the words. The word woman here, it's gune, it means woman, and it means wife. It's always in context that you can determine one from the other. And because of that, there are times when you cannot determine one from the other. There's some question. That shows up strongly, that's a big issue in 1 Timothy 3, when it's talking about deacons, and then it mentions women, and there is a contextual grammatical question. Are these female deacons, or is it the wives of the men that we're talking about? I'm bringing that up as an example of a question. I'm not going to handle that tonight, but that's a demonstration. So this word woman means woman. It means wife, so same thing with man or husband. It's aner, and it means man or husband. I find it interesting that the ESV chose to go with woman, which is the one idea, but then kept it to husbands rather than men at home. I think that should have been consistent. I think that would have been helpful. But that is what it chose to do here, at least in this translation. And that's just what these words mean. There's nothing necessarily groundbreaking or interesting about them. The word that is translated in the ESV here, keep silence. It's sigao. It means to keep silence, to hold your peace. It means to be kept in silence or to be concealed. It's almost always connected with the quiet concept, although it can have this concealing or this concealing idea. And that's why I've included this passage from Luke 9. And when the voice was passed, Jesus was found alone, and they kept it close and told no man in those days any of the things that they had seen. And so it wasn't they were just quiet. It's a quietness that is keeping it close and keeping it under wraps and not sharing any idea about it. The word keep silence means be quiet. It's not less loud. Sometimes when we are talking to somebody and they're singing a song and we say, be quiet or turn it down, you know, you're allowed to keep doing what you're doing, just a little bit less of that, if you don't mind. But that's not what this is. In Acts chapter 11, verse 18, Peter is, in chapter 10, he baptizes Cornelius, and he brings witnesses, right? Smart him. And the next chapter, all the Jewish Christians go, hey, what did you just do? And he goes, let me tell you the story. Let me tell you about the visions, and here's my witnesses. And they go through all that. And I want to read it so I don't get it wrong. It's a really neat use of words here. In 11:18, when they heard these things, they fell silent, and they glorified God, saying, then to the Gentiles also God has granted repentance that leads to life. The silence there is not tightened lips, but they were silent about their contesting. They were silent about their opposition. They were silent about that, and they expressed that silence by opening their mouth and glorifying God. That's a different word. So the Bible is capable of having a silent that is still open, right? That's what they did in Acts 11. They were silent in their opposition, but opened their mouths and glorifying God. And the word here is not that word. It's a different word, and it means to keep it close, to keep it concealed, and to be quiet. So there's no question, does the verse in 1 Corinthians 14, does that mean kind of quiet? No, it means quiet. And so that's at least clear and helpful to understand. And then we see in chapter 14, right before that in verse 34, in 28 and in 30, that same sigao Greek word is used, and it's to be quiet and to keep silence each time. I noticed that in the ESV translation, it does say keep silent and keep silent there. I think not every translation continues with that keep silent in every time, but there were some men that needed to keep silent in that context, and then there's that later word there for women. So it's a word that means to be quiet. He has here this phrase, in the churches. All three of those words show up in Greek. Not every time is the direct article the. The is not always there, but it is there. It's in the churches. And so there is this context here that he gives them. Let the women keep silent in the churches. And so we have a bit of a context. The word church, ecclesia, is this gathering of citizens called out into an assembly. I think that's a word that we are familiar with. And then somebody had brought up this yours or of, you know, the of you word. And that seems to be something that, while it was included in the text that they were working with in the early 1600s, when the King James, traditionally known as the received text, as textual criticism progressed and they were finding more copies of texts, this is one of those words that was taken out as time has gone on. It seems that this was a later edition that should not be there. So that is one of those arguments. You can argue whether it should or should not be. Modern textual critics say that this is not a right word to be in that. So it should be the women, not your women. The women, not your wives. But that's just kind of a breakdown of what's going on in that verse. Again, the context of what's been going on, it's a bunch of people scrambling for cool factor. They want to show off. They want to be puffed up. Chapter 12, body parts are wanting to be the cool body parts, and the uncool body parts are upset by that. And we can see that the problem of the way the tongues are being used at the beginning of chapter 14 is a mess. So they're grabbing onto that. And Paul is teaching this preeminence of love in chapter 13, and then he's teaching order in this latter half of chapter 14. And part of that order is y'all need to be quiet. He says it in 28, and he says it in 30, and he's speaking specifically to men who are getting up and speaking, or prophesying, or speaking in tongues. And he says that you guys need to be quiet unless something else. If you're speaking in tongues, if you don't have an interpreter, you be quiet. Just because you have this ability doesn't mean you can. And same thing with the prophet. You are in the middle of prophesying, and God gives the Spirit to another man, and he is supposed to prophesy, then I need to be quiet. Just because I have this doesn't mean I can. And then he has a reciprocal rule there in verse 34. The women need to be silent. And while 28 and 30 is for all men in certain circumstances, tongue speakers, if without an interpreter, be quiet. A prophet, if another prophet needs to speak, then the first needs to be quiet. The women is a general rule. The women should keep silent in the churches. And so the rule here, the rule of 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, is the women must keep silent. We're just kind of repeating what we've been looking at. The way I interpret that is, especially looking at what's going on, people getting up and speaking in tongues to the church, people getting up and speaking prophecy to the church. I think that means not speaking and addressing the assembly, not preaching, not teaching, not praying, not prophesying, not doing tongue speaking. Because when you read through the whole Bible, you also get the sense that there were women who had conversations, spoke to their neighbor, coming into the building. You know, we understand that there's this difference that's going on, and that's one of the problems and one of the complications. I think chapter 14 makes it clear this is speaking to, for, at, whatever preposition you want to throw in there, among the church, the assembly. And that's what's going on here. This seems to match other passages in the New Testament. Within 1 Corinthians, back in chapter 11, the whole first half was about the role and the duty of a woman and this headship and what she needs to do in order to honor her head and what she needs to have on her head. So Paul has been speaking about it within this letter. He speaks in 1 Timothy chapter 2 very clearly about this idea. I'm going to go ahead and read that starting in verse 9, 1 Timothy 2, verse 9. Likewise, also, that women should adorn themselves with respectable apparel, with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold and pearls and costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness, with good works. Let a woman learn quietly in all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And then he continues on with that. So he gives some instructions and some rules here for women. The women need to keep silent in the church, and there are other passages that meet and match this idea. I brought up 1 Timothy chapter 2. I want to say this as an aside to make sure that we get a sense here. 1 Corinthians 14 is all about when you're getting to church and when you're doing the in-church thing. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. That seems absolutely the context of what is going on. 1 Timothy chapter 2 does not. There's nothing in that chapter that makes me think this is about in-church. This is about being a person in the world. I desire that in every place, it said in verse 8, men should pray. So I should pray in here because this is a place, but I should also pray out there because it is also a place. And the women need to have this, follow these instructions of verses 9 through 15 in every place, as well as when we are in church together. And so chapter 2 is a different, has some different ideas and is a more expansive rule. And chapter 14 is a pretty specific to when we are in here together rule. But then the chapter 14 rule is where I'm talking about and thinking, when does this rule apply? When is an assembly? And this is really what kind of becomes a big question. We're trying to humbly respect God's law. This is not a rude question, although some people might try to, how can I wheedle out a way of breaking God's rule by requalifying the terms, right? That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to understand if 1 Corinthians 14 is in church, when are we in church? How do we define that? Now, I'm trying to be very careful with the way I word things on the PowerPoint. As I read the Bible, I have not found a definition, a description, a rule, or that which limits this is what church is and this is what church isn't, as in the time when we are being assembled. There's a lot of practices that I do in church and that I do at home. I pray at church and I pray at home. And both of those are described as worship. There are several words in the New Testament that are translated worship. And so just calling it, when we're worshiping. Well, we worship at home and we worship in the car when we're singing hymns. And there's a lot of ways that we worship God when we just break down and think about Him and pray and reach out to Him. And so I have not found definitions and rules and limits. What I do see are lots of ideas and descriptions. Not definitions, but ideas. And so here are two classic ones. Where two or more are gathered in my name, there I am among them. That's That's not the definition of church. I don't know anyone who wants to call that the definition of church. But it does describe an idea about what we're looking at, okay? Now, when two or more people are gathered together in God's name, it could be that they are, I don't know, maybe dragged before the Pharisees and the scribes, and the scribes say, "You're not supposed to teach in his name anymore." And they're saying, the apostles, right? "Oh, no, we're going to obey God rather than men." That was two or three gathered together in God's name. I don't know if I'd call that an assembly. But when we are gathered together in God's name and Christ is among us, you know, I can see that. So I like what Jesus says in Matthew 18. That's not a good definition. There is a triple redundancy in 1 Corinthians 14. This is an interesting statement. "If, therefore, the whole church comes together," and then all speak, and, you know, he goes into his idea. That triple redundancy is pretty interesting. If the whole, and church can mean assembly, right? The assembled ones. If the whole assembly assembles, right? Well, if it's an assembly, then it's the assembly assembling. And if it's the whole assembly, so it's curious. So it sounds like maybe Paul is making this emphasis. When we are all together, that's when we're all together. And if four or five of us show up for something, that's not all of us. So that might have some help, but it doesn't seem to be a definition or a limit of what qualifies as church. Because if somebody is sick and doesn't show up, is it no longer an assembly of the Lord? Or what if somebody has to use the restroom in the middle of an assembly, and is it no longer an assembly? But these are helps. They describe some things. What we're trying to figure out is, when is church assembling? Christ is going to build his church, the universal idea. There was a church in Corinth, that local idea. We're talking about when are we locally doing the thing? And within 1 Corinthians, particularly in 11 and 14, we have passages that emphasize when we are churching. And I think the Greek word is sunerkomai, which means like with coming. I think that's translated. I forgot to include it here in my notes. But it gets translated almost in every Bible the same way. When you come together. So when we come together. When you come together, it's not for the better. Of course, that's a bad example. It's when they're doing it in a bad way. But when you come together, it's not for the better, but it's for the worse. For in the first place, when you come together in a church. ESV translated it as, but it's technically in. When you come together in church. I think that's a pretty good definition of when an assembly is an assembly. In later on in the chapter, "So then, my brothers, when you come together to eat, wait for one another." He then has a contrast. Wait for one another. If anyone's hungry, let him eat at home. There is a difference. You can eat elsewhere, but when you come together, it's for this thing. And so we can see a difference there, right? Does that mean you can't do church at home, that you're only allowed to eat? No. It's when you're coming together, we come together for this, and so purpose is now included. If you want to eat, there's places for that. There's other places for that. You can do that at home. But when we are coming together, it's not to eat, it's to commune, maybe is what we would say. In chapter 14, it happens a few times. "Nevertheless, in church, I would rather speak five words." I think this is kind of interesting. The word church means the called out ones. Church isn't a place. It's the people. But Paul's using it kind of the way that we do in the 21st century. In church, in assembly, I would rather do this. And so we're getting that sense. Again, these are not definitions of what makes an assembly, but the Bible does start getting us in the right direction. It seems like we're coming together for these things to understand. I like that triple redundancy in verse 23, but if I try to make that a law, it's rarely ever going to be an assembly. You know, things happen. Are we going to lock people in the room? If you have to go to the bathroom, then it's no longer churching. No. So we need to work together to, and I think one of the points here is that God has given us no strict definition so that we can make things work when people are sick, or when people do have work conflicts, or when people do go out of town, we can still assemble and be who we are in those times. So how do we know when an assembly is an assembly? Okay, you can say, when Christians come together because of Christ. This is a great passage here in Acts 20, 6 and 7. We sailed away from Philippi into the days after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days we came to Troas, and we stayed there for 7 days. There's the number 7. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul talked with them, intending to depart the next day, and he prolonged his speech until midnight. Luke, who loves all the details, he's giving us time and date details. You get this sense that there was an emphasis of staying there for that specific day. We waited 7 days for that day, but we had to leave the next morning. And so he prolonged, there's this emphasis there. They could have met any day of the week, but there was this desire to meet on that day, or maybe it was that was the one day that everybody could get together, but whatever it is, that was the day, that was this time of assembly, that was this time when he's going to preach, that was the time when they were going to break bread. Do you think that Paul just stayed in his hotel and watched movies waiting for Sunday? He was probably talking to people. We see that in every story about Paul. But that was the day they assembled, is the way it sounds. Why? Well, they did it to break bread, as well as other things. And so there is this purpose. How do we know when an assembly is an assembly? Well, sometimes you just kind of know. If we all accidentally show up at Wendy's at the same time, have we accidentally turned it into a church building? No? Well, are we all going to pray for our fries and Frosties? Does that mean now it's church because we're all praying? No. Like, there's this sense of we know what's going on. And we got to be really careful, because there are very few times where I think we can say, well, the Bible doesn't say specifically, so just whatever you think. That's not the way we operate. We go by what God says, but there are demonstrations where people got together and did things as we get together and do things. So sometimes there is differences in place and purpose. If we all show up at a fire hall to share time, share food, share experiences, that's a place that's different. We can do church there. The purpose is different, and we're beginning to see that if the purpose is a potluck, or if the purpose is to celebrate somebody's life or somebody's memory or things like that, we're beginning to change the nature of what that assembly is about. If we all assemble to play baseball together, if we all assemble to go on a hike together, even if we pray, dear God, keep us safe on this hike, we haven't changed it into the communion necessarily. So there is a place concept, a purpose concept. If we start assembling in our different homes, I've worshiped with churches that met in houses. But there's a difference between when they're meeting for church and when they're done with church, and they're talking together. Same thing here. When we're meeting for church, and when we're done and we're talking together. That gets into the concept of tradition. We love tradition as human beings. And one tradition that we absolutely love at church is the opening and the closing prayer. And I will tell you how much we are desperate for the closing prayer. Unfortunately, I'm going to put him on the spot. We ended a prayer night with a closing word and no closing prayer, and everybody was afraid to get up and talk because we didn't know, are we done yet? Like, we like that. And there's nothing in the Bible that says thou shalt open with prayer and thou shalt close with prayer. But we have that tradition. It's very physical. We speak it. We hear it. And because of that tradition, we know the boundaries. I am now allowed to turn to my wife and have a conversation, and I don't think that I should be doing that during a sermon, whether I'm up here or down there. And so there is an example that we have some things that we operate with that we know. One example of that, of using tradition, we sometimes have post-prayer announcements because there is something we want to share, but we don't feel like that has a place in the spiritual time of assembly and worship. So we have, there's an announcement after the prayer. And that makes sense. Not every church I've been with does that. Some do, some don't. But it's a way that we can understand when are we and when are we not. When we are working with traditions like that, we have to be careful. Because there are churches that traditionally let women preach. So just because it's our habit or our tradition, we need to be thinking about these things. James 4:8, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Whatever our tradition, whatever our habit is, let's remember to draw near to God and not just base things on tradition. So the big question really comes down to, is Bible class assembly? That's really one of the big questions and one of the difficulties. The purpose of a class is definitely in our culture, and I have not been alive in first century Mediterranean cultures, right? So I don't know what they did in their class learning format, but in our culture and much of Western culture, there's dialogue. Primarily, there's a teacher teaching, but then there's question and answer and interaction to boost and help understanding. Jesus himself taught that way with the apostles. He asked questions. He answered debates with questions. And so this question and answer format is a part of, I would guess, human society, not just Western society. And so we have this format of classes, and that's really what the big question that we often come to is: a Bible class and assembly. I think that we can determine a time of study specifically designed for discussion and questions and learning, much like what we do when we are around a coffee table or around a table at Wendy's. I think we can have those kinds of conversations and have that environment to be as opposed to and separate from when we assemble for the purpose of preaching, communion, and prayer, and if I had the gift of prophecy, prophecy, and gift of tongues, tongues. That's something I believe. I'm using the word believe here because I'm trying to say that this is my judgment when I'm studying and understanding. So because of that, I think that there is a class context where men and women can ask some questions. I think one of the places that this became a big question in my mind was when I was removed from my more traditional environment or size of congregation and was worshiping in Albany when there was about 16 of us. And now the question becomes somewhat different. Lots of new Christians who need to learn, who don't just know the ropes, mostly women. How am I going to serve them? And, only one kid's Bible class, my wife teaching two boys. And so if there's one person out, is that not it's not as big of a distinction? So that was where I really had a lot of questions and I started working on this. And when I visited my good friends in Elmira, the Binghams and the Broadwells, it was a congregation of four. It did grow. They had a baby, one of them. So it was a congregation of five. And so they would assemble in a living room and the women would keep silent in that assembly time. And then afterwards, there would be conversations. Even if it's around the dinner table, it's in the, 12 feet away. And so that was really putting a lot of questions to, is this something that can be? But I've really come to understand, my belief is that we can have a time of that sort of discussion. I have some Bible examples, and these are not great Bible examples. I'm just going to admit this flat out. Here's an example of men and women together in learning circumstances, and some of them we know the women spoke. When Jesus is with Martha and Mary, and Martha comes in and complains about Mary. This is a really bad example, but it is an example of a teaching environment, men and women, and one woman speaks. This is not what we're talking about. But I'm just looking for every circumstance that I could find that might be somewhat related. When Jesus is teaching, sorry, I have it backwards. The first one was when Jesus was teaching, and he says, your family's looking for you, your mother and your brothers. He says, who are my mothers and my brothers and my sisters? Those who do the will of God. And so he's in this group of men and women. And so he's speaking and teaching with them. Now we have the passage where Martha actually speaks out. Now, we might say that she should have been quiet for a number of different reasons, but that is an example. I'm just trying to pull examples of this. I do like this as an example. On the Sabbath day, this is Paul and I think Silas and Timothy, we went outside to the gate by the riverside where we supposed there was a place of prayer, and we sat down and spoke to the women who had come together. This is outside of Philippi. Lydia responds to the gospel. She actually says something. Of course, she says it after her baptism. I'm not saying that this is any demonstration of she's speaking out at church. There's no, I don't know where churching is. Can we call this church? But this is a time when it looks like three guys met with a group of women. I don't know how that worked out, but I would have, Dan Bunting's guess is that there is some discussion at some point, and there would have been a silent part at some point, some sort of interaction there. We see the story of Apollos, Priscilla, and Aquila, or Aquila. Apollos is speaking boldly in the synagogue, but Priscilla and Aquila heard him. They take him aside. Now, they're doing it outside of whatever assembly format that is, and they're going to the side, but here is a woman who is involved in helping out this man in his understanding, and so there is dialogue going on there. I have always found it interesting, and I don't know if I can make a strong point. It's often listed as Aquila, it begins to be listed as Aquila and Priscilla. I think most of the times their names are listed, her name comes before his. And her name does come before his in this teaching moment. And I don't know if that means anything or not. Maybe Priscilla just knew the truth better, and she had more help for Apollos than her husband Aquila. I don't know. There's also in Colossae, the church that is meeting at church that is meeting at Nympha's house. That doesn't mean anything about her talking or not, but it is a demonstration. So, like I said, this is not definitive. There's no rule. There's very little order and structure, but I do think it's compelling to think about what was the environment when Paul met with these women outside of Philippi. What was going on with them, and how did he help them? So I think that we can have a class time designated for learning and discussion. I operate my classes that way. I like to invite discussion in that. I think that in 1 Corinthians 14:34, let the women keep silence in the churches is not permitted for them to speak, but let them be in subjection, that we are trying to make a distinction between a class time together and the time when we are assembled for the purpose of preaching and teaching and prophesying. But now I'm going to throw in the complication. Verse 35 speaks specifically to asking questions. Let them ask the men at home, whether it's their husband, their fathers, their sons, or whomever. So this is why this is a complicated idea. I wrote in that green box what I think we can do. And then I'm also including verse 35, which makes me always question what I wrote in that green box. It makes me pause and think about this seriously. I still think that we can do a Bible class, but I'm not going to ignore the fact that verse 35 is speaking specifically to the point of asking questions. And that's what I come to when I'm looking at this idea. I'm really happy to hear your thoughts on that. But let's think about the other side. Other side number one. We are talking about and trying to understand the very specific point of, can we designate a time to talk and discuss the Bible together in a class format? That's a very specific question. We are not wondering about what does a church do. What is a man's role when the assembly has assembled, and what is a woman's role when the assembly has assembled? The Bible is really clear. I think that there is room for a class, and that's something that we need to talk about at times, But the role is not under question here. That's not questioned. We're discussing, we are considering whether a designated class allows speaking. We're not considering whether the assembly of Christians allows speaking from women. And that's really what it comes down to. Another side about this is there's a lot of clarity about men speaking. So why am I spending all this time wondering about women when I have a role that I need to fill? I'm not saying just me. I'm saying this for every guy. Well, doesn't my wife have something important to say? Doesn't she have something important to add? Shouldn't her prayers, even just at home, shouldn't that be valuable? That was an important question that I was wondering for a long while. Doesn't my wife have something to add? Absolutely. What if I listened to her praying for me? I'm sure she would have the great things to say. But one thing I do know, while that might be under question, it is very clear in 1 Timothy 2:8, I desire that in every place that men should pray. So the question should not be directed at, should my wife also pray? The question is, why am I not praying? What is my role and what is my duty? Not just Dan's role and duty, but for all the men. I desire in every place that men should pray. He then speaks about women. And then he immediately gets into, in chapter 3 again, the roles of men. If you desire the office of an elder or overseer, you desire a good thing. And here's the work of deacons. And he is giving instructions about how men are supposed to behave. But not just men, men and women. And he says in verse 15 of 1 Timothy 3, if I delay, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and a buttress of the truth. We are learning what we need to do. And men must not relinquish the responsibility that God has given them. It's important to ask about how can we include others, or is it right or not to include others. But what we must never do is in the process of trying to open up and welcome others, that guys do what is so natural for so many guys to do, just kind of slide back on the couch and stop doing what they're supposed to do. We need to do what's right. And so, guys, you need to get ready for Bible class. Honestly, you need to get ready to teach Bible class or teach a Wednesday night talk or a Sunday sermon. You need to be able to teach the kids, and you need to be the older kids and the younger kids, and you need to be able to teach the adults, and you also need to prepare to come to Bible class to help the class. Or if you studied for class and you realize, I don't know what this verse is about, you need to come prepared to realizing that you don't know so that you can know. Guys need to prepare for these sorts of things so that they can speak out and be helpful. You need to prepare for your prayers. You need to prepare for your songs. You need to be prepared for whatever lessons that you do. This is our role as men. And while it's important to wonder or have questions about some other roles, we need to step up to the plate and do what we are supposed to do. And so I need to let others work on their own conscience, and I need to get busy with my own job. It's a little bit like I've got a plank or I've got a job stuck in my eye. I need to work on this job before I worry about a speck in somebody else. I have work that I need to do. We all need to consider our own consciences as we're working through this. What I come to as I'm studying through this is I need to seek to know and to understand God's word. There's parts of it that are very clear. I think it's clear the woman's role when we are assembled as an assembly, all of us to do these things. That's very clear. I think the question about a class learning format is a good question. I think it's a little bit less clear. But I need to know and I need to understand. And in all of that, I need to draw near to God, not near to what the line in the sand might be. If we're talking alcohol, and I think I'm able to have, based on my body weight and my habits, I can have X amount of ounces of alcohol. Okay, if I scientifically come up with the right number, that's the amount that I can have. I need to draw near to God, which is in the other direction. I need to know what may be right or what is right or what's allowable, and I need to keep going in the direction of God, not towing the line. Because when Christ shows up and I find out I drew the line wrong, if I've been drawing near to God the whole time, I will be safe. And if I've been drawing near to the line the whole time, I'm going to be in trouble. We also need to seek to help each other, respecting individual consciences, seeking to respect the decisions of others, and respect the personal boundaries of others. Well, I don't want to. I don't feel this is right. We need to let people have their decisions there. If they're asking for advice or if they're asking for help, we need to offer it. And if not, we might just need to keep our mouths shut. That's an important thing. We are not the judge of others. When we start to judge, we start to destroy. So someone might choose to not speak in a Bible class because of their scriptural understanding. I respect that a lot because I read through these verses and I have some questions that I work out on my own. Some people may choose to not speak in a Bible class because of their own family dynamic. Or because of their own personal moment, I need to be humble right now, so I just need to be quiet. It has nothing to do with assembly or not. Some people might choose to not speak much in Bible class because, and this is me, I'm up here talking all the time, and I don't want it to be me all the time, even when I'm sitting down there. I know a very good preacher. He limits himself to one comment in class, and he has to pick very, very carefully what he's going to be willing to say if he's only going to give himself one opportunity to speak in a Bible class. These are good rules in general, right? There's a lot of reasons someone might choose to speak or not to speak, and we need to listen and pay attention and be very careful for each other. One side point that I want to bring up, in Albany, when there was not a lot of us, and it was mostly women, and most of the women were single, we ran into the difficulty of, if there's a meeting of the men and the leaders, sometimes it was three guys in a church of 20-some. So you do the math on how many women are not being included in that. We started assigning women to the guys, like, all right, you need to check up on Mrs. So-and-so and Miss, okay, well, they're in the same household. You could, you know, check with them and check with them. And because we were afraid that maybe there were going to be people who weren't getting a chance to speak out because the Bible says about being silent. Well, if the Bible says that they need to be silent, it's then my job to find opportunities where they can speak to me or know that I have an open ear to them. My wife's going to make sure that I hear her, but there are some other women who might need me to reach out to them or you to reach out to them so that these voices can be heard. God has set up roles, and we need to make sure that all of us are doing the job of making sure that everyone can be heard if we are not going to have certain types of speaking in different contexts. That's something that I wanted to include in this lesson, although it's outside the point. That reminds me also of this other idea. If you want to turn, we're going to close by looking at a little bit in 1 Timothy chapter 2. When I was talking to my wife about this, one of my thoughts I said, and I realized I told her, I'm going to say this to the whole group, I hope I don't forget to include this idea that you said to me or this idea that you wanted me to share. I'm saying that to every one of you that I've had a conversation with about this. I hope I'm not forgetting or excluding some of the things that you said. There's a lot of ideas, and I'm trying to put it together into a sermon format, not an encyclopedia. And so if I've left something out, it's not because I don't like you. It's because I forgot or it wasn't going into the sermon format. There's a lot of ideas that we're talking about, and I want to continue these conversations with you if you have questions. I'm trying to assemble lots of scriptural ideas to help us get a picture of how we can make decisions as individuals and decisions as a collection of individuals, as God's church. I want to read not all of chapter 2. I'm going to start in verse 8. But again, this is just saying, what is it that we're supposed to be doing? Who are we and what should we be and be together? So 1 Timothy chapter 2, 8 through the end of the chapter. I desire then that in every place the men should pray, lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling. Likewise also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and with gold and pearls and costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness, with good works. Let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. Yet she will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. Men are told to, and somebody pointed this out to me and I thought it was a really fun joke. Men are told to lift their hands in prayer, not lift their hands in anger. I think that that is summing up the problem of masculinity in one perfect little verse. We need to lift our hands in prayer, not in fists. And women have rules and roles, and by the time you get to the end, if these are verses that seem stressful to some people, redemption is offered in there, the blessing of who they are as a person. And I've always found that that is a really powerful way that Paul talks about this. Paul doesn't shut us down. Jesus doesn't shut us down. God gives us life. He gives us rules and boundaries to work with. And when we are working in those rules and those boundaries, we thrive and we live and we have everlasting life because of that. Again, not because of our works, but because of God. So I hope that this is helpful. It was not a short sermon. I was trying to not let it drag on too long. I appreciate your paying attention. And I'm also happy to hear whatever thoughts or questions that you have about this. But my hope is that this can encourage us, at least in knowing these scriptures as we think through this together as a congregation, so that we can feel confident about who we are and what we do. I don't know where you are in your walk with Christ. This is the crowd that shows up knowing God's word and knowing what we need to do. That doesn't mean that we're great. It doesn't mean that we're perfect. It means that, like everybody, we still need help. We need encouragement from each other, and we need to not be afraid of each other and not be afraid of asking for help. If there's anyone here who needs prayers, if there's anyone here who needs help, why don't you let us know as we stand together and sing?